There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, that guy over there, Tim Dennis. And we have got news for you, folks. It is a weird, wild world this week, Tim. I don't even know that I need to read the story. All I have to read is the headline for this story.
Okay.
Because, Tim, it seems Uranus is not safe.
It isn't.
And it's time to embrace a new mindset because Jupiter is squaring Uranus, Tim.
It is.
The year is already off to a wild start, and an unpredictable transit on January 17th might add fuel to the fire. That's when Jupiter, the planet of luck and abundance, will square with Uranus. I am such a child. I'm never going to get tired of that. The planet of freedom and rebellion. Did you know that?
I had no idea.
Yeah, Uranus is all about freedom and rebellion.
Well, when it is after I've had a McRib or two.
That's right. This clash last happened in 2014. And when these two planets come together, it often aligns with life-changing breakthroughs or eruptive protests. Uranus could just explode with eruptive protests, Tim.
I can, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've seen
it.
I've seen it, yeah.
At the time of this squaring, Jupiter will be in Aquarius and Uranus.
Jupiter gets around.
Oh, God, why am I such a child when it comes to this? 15 years in, Tim, these stories never bore me.
And they shouldn't.
At the time of the square, Jupiter will be in Aquarius and Uranus will be in Taurus, says
Oh, my
Ariana
God, that could be
Montefiore.
Horrible. Yeah. Think about that, Uranus and Taurus.
Don't Taurus my Uranus, though. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Senior astrologer for astrology.com, Uranus' job is to bring change. Uranus' job is to bring change by shaking up the status quo, Tim.
Never used it as a coin purse, but that's a new one.
Uh-huh. The planet's transits are usually intense and unpredictable. Have you ever had that problem with Uranus, finding that it's intense and sometimes unpredictable?
Oh, yes. I've had many a night where I just bring the old iPad in with me, and we just sit there and keep ourselves company.
Well, those... Those words describe the first month of 2020 to a T, but this specific squaring may offer an opportunity for a change in our energy, says astrologer Lisa Stardust. We'll feel overly optimistic and want to break through the constraints that hold us back, she says. Embracing our new mindset will open us up to amazing possibilities. If 2020 was the year of, like, realizing things, a la Kylie Jenner, then 2021 is shaping up to be the year of putting some action behind those realizations. The I want to change the world energy is here. It's explosive. The square Jupiter forms with Uranus is important because it will magnify Uranus and what it's doing. I don't know that I need my anus magnified.
Oh, it will be. If Jupiter is square, you're going to be magnified by quite a bit.
Woo! Yeah. Woo! All right. The square Jupiter forms with Uranus is important because it will magnify what Uranus is doing, which is bringing an enormous amount of change into our society and the way we relate to government and authority. Jupiter is the largest planet in the solar system, and it expands everything it touches.
Oh my god.
It is going to expand Uranus beyond belief, Tim. The urge to change broken systems will be impossible to ignore. Now, while Jupiter is squaring Uranus, means drastic change for the collective, on a personal level, we'll be feeling the need to break free from what's been holding us back. If we've been feeling like a job, relationship, or situation is trapping us, the tension coming from the square might push us to act. Montefiore says, this transit will affect everyone, but since it's in a mixed square, if you're a fixed sign like a Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, or Aquarius, I happen to be a Scorpitagius, Tim.
Scorpitagius, you say?
Yeah, part Sagittarius, part Scorpio, born on the cusp, and boy, did that hurt. Mm. It'll hit you especially hard. Each of those four signs will notice tension in a certain area. Am I going to notice a lot of tension by my anus, Tim?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. Leo and Taurus in their work lives, Scorpio in their love lives, and Aquarius in their home lives. Uh-oh, I got to have some issue in my love life. I don't like that.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I could just flush that right out of Uranus. I don't even want that part of the squaring to take place. Whew, so that's it. It's a gambler's transit. That's what Leslie Hale, psychic astrologer at Keen.com, says. Meaning it can go either way in terms of incredible breakthroughs or disappointing loss.
Could go either way, huh?
Yeah. Hmm. Well, why does that come to mind, the old poem, Tim, when you say it could go either way in terms of incredible breakthroughs or disappointing loss? Why am I reminded of the poem my grandfather would often quote?
Well, I did.
You know what that poem is, Tim?
Why don't you remind us, Dave?
Here I sit, brokenhearted, tried to shit, but only fart.
Yeah, yes, that's the one.
Yeah, see, it's a disappointment. It's either going to come through or it's not, Tim.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I don't know what they're trying to tell us here, Tim. But I got to tell you, I'm a little worried about our future. Because the next story takes us right into this headline. Humans could move to this floating asteroid belt colony in the next 15 years, according to an astrophysicist. Now more than ever, space agencies and starry-eyed billionaires have their minds fixed on finding a new home for humanity beyond Earth's orbit. Mars is an obvious candidate given its relatively close proximity, 24-hour day-night cycle, and CO2-rich atmosphere. However, there's a school of spacefaring thought that suggests colonizing the surface of another planet, any planet, is more trouble than it's worth. Now, a new paper published January 6th, to the preprint database ARXIV offers a creative counterproposal. Ditch the red planet and build a gargantuan floating habitat around the dwarf planet Ceres instead. In the paper, which has not yet been peer-reviewed, astrophysicist Pekka Jenhunen of the Finnish Meteorological Institution in Helsinki describes his vision of a mega satellite of thousands of cylindrical spacecrafts all linked together inside of a disc-shaped frame that permanently orbits Ceres, the latest object in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. Each of these cylindrical habitats could accommodate upwards to 50,000 people, support an artificial atmosphere, and generate an Earth-like gravity through the centrifugal force of its own rotation. That's what Jenhunen wrote in this article, Tim. The general idea first proposed in the 70s is known as the O'Neill Cylinder. But why Ceres? Its average distance from Earth is comparable to that of Mars, it says, Tim. And Jenhunen wrote, making travel relatively easy, but the dwarf planet also has a big elemental advantage. Ceres is rich in nitrogen, which could be crucial in developing the orbiting settlement's atmosphere. Jenhunen said Earth's atmosphere is roughly 79% nitrogen. Rather than building a colony on the surface of the tiny world, Ceres has a radius roughly only 1/13th of that of Earth. Settlers could utilize space elevators to transfer raw materials from the planet directly up to their orbiting habitats. So we're going to become the Galactus of the universe, Tim. We're going to build this traveling platform and just go hover over dwarf planets and eat them and then move on. That's what I think. The planet's 1/113th that of Earth.
Is it just me, or does it seem like we're working way too hard to live when we could just work a little bit harder to live here?
Right? Right. All these trillions of dollars that would be spent if we poured it in here, would we could reverse a lot of the effect taking place on this planet. That's a big problem I've had with searching for life on other planets. You know what? Who cares? If it's out there, it's doing its own thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested. Don't get me wrong. I'm fascinated. But I have a hard time knowing that we have homeless vets and we've got children dying of diseases that should have been handled by now. That we've got just the homeless in general and mental health issues, that we're not spending more money on that as opposed to, you know, why do spider monkeys masturbate let's go find a molecule out on Uranus's moon, Tim.
Well, we need to find that molecule.
I guess. So that's just part of it. I don't know. That's part of it. Now, this trifecta of weird stories ends with this one, Tim. This is why I said I don't know what they're telling me, but I'm a little nervous. Okay. You have this astrophysicist saying we should be up there within the next 15 years.
Yep.
And this is the next headline we have. Earth is overdue a mass extinction event by over 30 million years.
Really?
Doomsday scenarios are usually the subject of Hollywood blockbusters, but experts believe they are more scientific fact than fiction, with Earth overdue a mass extinction event for more than 30 million years. They have worked out that the catastrophic global incidents came roughly every 27 million years, and with the last mass extinction 66 million years ago, when dinosaurs were wiped out by the asteroid or comet, they reckon Earth could just be living on borrowed time. Catastrophic events such as meteor strikes and eruptions can follow with a cycle. With the new statistical analysis, U.S. researchers concluded extinction comet showers occur every 26 to 30 million years when they pass through the galaxy. If they hit Earth, the cataclysm impacts could create widespread dark and cold wildfires, acid rain, and ozone depletion. These would potentially kill off land and marine life. The scientists also found all eight of the coinciding mass extinctions on land and in the oceans match times of flood basalt eruptions, where an enormous amount of lava flow on the Earth's surface. This would create lethal greenhouse heating and less oxygen in the ocean. Any threat is down to how the planet orbits the Milky Way, they say. The study's author, Professor Michael Rampino from the New York University's Department of Biology, said, "It seems that large body impacts and the pulses of internal Earth activity that create flood basalt volcanism might be marching to the same 27 million year drumbeat as the extinctions, perhaps paced by our orbit in the galaxy. These new findings of coinciding sudden mass extinctions on land and in oceans are on the common of 26 to 27 million year cycles. They lend credence to the idea of periodic global catastrophic events as the triggers for extinctions. In fact, there are three of the mass annihilations of species on land and in the sea are already known to have occurred at the same times as the three largest impacts of the last 250 million years, each capable of causing a global disaster and resulting in mass extinctions. The global mass extinctions were apparently caused by the largest cataclysmic impacts and massive volcanism, perhaps sometimes working in concert. These findings are published in the journal Historical Biology."
You know, when you say mass extinction event, it to me, I keep thinking of, and you may think this is weird, I think of the potential volcano. Is it Yellowstone National Park?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one that keeps coming to mind for me.
Well, that's due, and that the plates off of the Pacific Northwest are like 30 or 40 years overdue for a major shift.
Yeah.
Which they believe could bring tsunamis all the way into Oregon. God.
Yeah.
What a cheerful day we're having today, kids, huh?
Yeah. Yay.
I bet you're missing that first 5 minutes of Giggle Fest about Uranus, aren't you?
But yeah, that's the one that, but you know, when you think about it, and you know, I hate to, you know, I know a lot of people are rolling their eyes right now because they're waiting for those two words to come out of our mouths. But you think of the heating up of the planet and you think, okay, is an extinction event one event or is it a series of events that end up causing mass extinction on the planet?
I think that's what this article was saying. Yeah, is that there's two. There's the pummeling of Earth, which could be one way, or it's the natural version, which is going on with the volcanic eruptions and other issues, which could cause really bad things. Yeah,
you look over the last even 5 years, 10 years, we've had more weather events, we've had more natural occurrences, volcanic eruptions and things like that, that are more unusual. And you know, I think you'll back me on this play here, that we've had more violent weather eruptions throughout the world, not just the United States, but the world, that you would think, okay, is this truly global warming, that people hate that word, or is it truly part of an extinction event? You know, that you could say, well, maybe it's the, you know, Mother Earth trying to shake the ticks off her back.
Well, hopefully it's a slow ride.
Yeah, okay, well, that's
take
the thing.
It easy.
We don't know because
we
weren't
planet by then.
We don't know because we weren't around for the last extinction event, how long these things last.
Right.
And if it gets worse.
But that's my point, is all of a sudden you have astrophysicists saying, hey, it's not a bad idea that we start looking to, you know, get up off this planet. It's time to go. And then your next story immediately is, we're about 30 million years past an extinction.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird. All right, we have an email, believe it or not, Tim. And we want to hear from you if you've had strange encounters, sightings of your own, if you've seen ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, you've had a psychic premonition that came true, you've had other strange paranormal activity. We want to know about it. You can email me, dave@darknessradio.com. You can also call into our Voices from Beyond voicemail at 651-300-4977.
Yes.
It's a drag getting old. 651-300-4977. Here's an email we've got asking to be kept anonymous, though.
Oh, okay.
No problem, Bill. I live in New York in the... what?
No problem, Bill.
Yeah. I live in New York in the Queens area, and yesterday, this was sent to me on Monday, as I was driving onto the highway, I had a strange sighting. I've driven this highway many times before, but never experienced what I'm about to tell you. It was a partly sunny day, and I always wear my sunglasses due to a condition with my eyes. As I was turning onto the highway, I saw a bright light, brighter than I have ever seen. Now, it wasn't in the sky per se, but it was in front of me between the sky and my car, shaped like a diamond. A diamond that was with has the long lines coming down to short lines, almost like a keyhole. I blinked my eyes and it was still there. I looked again and it was gone. I wondered, was I the only one who saw this beautiful light? Have you ever heard anything or anyone who has experienced this? I'd love to know. It was as if I was seeing into another dimension. I will say it was brighter than anything I have ever seen. Love you guys, and I listen all the time. Love, Anonymous. So if any listeners in New York's in New York or Queens area happen to notice this on Monday, or if anybody has ever witnessed this, period, send in an email. Let's hear from you.
Got me thinking of that old school song about diamond in the back. So, digging the scene, gangsta lean.
Sorry. I don't know that one.
You don't? I have it on my phone if you want me to.
No, I'm good. I'm
good. Could play it underneath us while we talk. You know, it's
no, I'm good. I'm good. Hey, scientists have an interesting find, Tim.
Okay.
Scientists say dinosaur bones may be on the moon.
Who put them up there? Was it Neil Armstrong?
Ma, pa, sis, boom, ba. I don't know. Hmm. Although Neil Armstrong was the first human to step foot on the moon in 1967, dinosaurs may have beat him to it 66 million years prior, or at least pieces of the prehistoric creatures did. The claim stems from Peter Brannon's 2017 book, The End of the World, which was recently shared on Twitter by blogger Matt Austin. An excerpt describes the violent asteroid as it ripped a hole of outer space vacuum in the atmosphere. This sent debris flying into orbit, and bits of dinosaurs may have been mixed up in the enormous volume of Earth that expelled into space, all of which settled on the moon. The catastrophic asteroid crashed into what experts say was the deadliest possible angle, when it came barreling into what is now Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. Brannon, who is an award-winning science journalist, writes that the asteroid was larger than Mount Everest and came crashing through the atmosphere 20 times faster than a speeding bullet, Tim, with the ability to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
Sounds like somebody I know.
Superman, yeah. This is so fast that it would have traversed the distance from the cruising altitude of a 747 to the ground in 0.3 seconds. The book includes comments from geophysicist Mario Robadello at the Centro de Investigación, who told Brannon the pressure of the atmosphere front of the asteroid started excavating the crater before it even got there. How about that? Then, when the meteorite touched ground zero, it was totally intact. It was so massive. How massive was it? The atmosphere didn't even make a scratch on it. The book says the scene witnessed 66 million years ago was nowhere near what we see in Hollywood films that usually show a brilliant ball of fire streaking across the sky as the asteroid collided with the Earth in the sky above it. Where there should have been air, the rock had punched a hole of outer space vacuum in our atmosphere, Brannon explains. As the heavens rushed in to close this hole, enormous volumes of Earth were expelled into orbit and beyond, all within a second or two of impact. So there's probably little bits of dinosaur bone on the moon. That's the long and short of the story, Tim, according to Brannon. And Robadello replies, yeah, probably.
He knows the Pope?
That's what the answer is. He said, yeah, probably. Although there is no evidence to support claims in the end of the world, scientists have been able to piece together the events that unfolded. The asteroid left a 120-mile-wide crater at the disaster zone, vaporizing rock and sending billions of tons of sulfur and carbon dioxide into the prehistoric skies. All living things within hundreds of miles of the impact site would have been incinerated within minutes. Meanwhile, the dust cloud generated by the impact would have blocked out the sun, like triggering a nuclear winter and seeing temperatures plunge, acid rain falling from the skies, and 75% of living species wiped out. So all that would be left is Nick Cage and Keanu Reeves, Tim.
I don't doubt it. And then they took a spaceship here to Earth, and then they repopulated the Earth.
That's right.
Yeah,
it would have felt like the ground beneath your feet had become a ship in the middle of the ocean, said Earth and Space Science Professor Mark Richards at the University of Washington. Then rocks would have bombarded you from a boiling sky that was beginning to take on a hazy glow. It would have seemed like the end of the world. Because it kind of was. Steve, seems like a bit of an understatement. It would have seemed, Tim, like the end of the world.
But surprise, it wasn't.
All right, Tim. Since we're talking dinosaurs, dinosaur fossils could belong to the world's largest creature ever. Experts have uncovered the remains of a gigantic dinosaur in Argentina and believed it could be one of the largest creatures to have ever walked the earth. Paleontologists discovered the fossilized remains of a 98 million year old titanosaur. How about that? Titanosaur.
Are they just making names up now?
It's a great name, Titanosaur. And I'm looking at the picture. It's like, imagine a brachiosaur or brontosaur. Longer.
What do they call little tiny itty bitty bitty sores?
Teeny sores. Or itty bitty teeny sores. I don't know.
Do they? Really?
Yeah, they found it in the Neuquén province in Argentina's northwest Patagonia in thick sedimentary deposits known as the Candelarias Formation. The 24 vertebrae of the tail and elements of the pelvic and pectoral girdle discovered are thought to belong to a titanosaur, a diverse group of sauropod dinosaurs characterized by their large size, a long neck and tail, and four-legged stance. In research published in the journal Cretaceous Research, experts say they believe the creature to be one of the largest sauropods ever found and could exceed the size of a Patagonian, a species which lived 100 million to 95 million years ago and measured up to a staggering 122 feet long. It's a huge dinosaur, but we expect to find much more of the skeleton in the future field trips, so we'll have the possibility to address with confidence how really big it was, according to Alejandro Otero, a paleontologist with Argentina's Museo de la Planta, told CNN via email. Titanosaur fossils have been found on all continents except Antarctica. But the biggest multi-ton varieties of the species, including those titanosaurs exceeding 40 tons, have mostly been discovered in Patagonia. Without analyzing the dinosaur's humerus or femur, experts say it's not yet possible to say how much the creature weighs. However, the partially recovered dinosaur can be considered one of the largest titanosaurs, experts say, and with a probable body mass exceeding or comparable to that of a Patagonian or an Argentinosaurus. A Patagotitan. Patagotitan. I don't know. Patagotitan. Titan is last known. Patagotitan.
Patagotitan.
Or an Argentinosaurus. Don't cry for me, Argentina. Patagonians may have been the world's largest terrestrial animal of all time and weighed up to 77 tons. How'd they do that without fast food restaurants, Tim?
Well, they definitely weren't vegetarians, I can tell you that.
No, they were not. They were double dipping the Oreos in the milk. That's what I think.
Yep. I think so. Yep.
So how did they get that big? What did they eat? Well, how did they live? Dave, what does all this have to do with the paranormal? I don't know. It's just there was dinosaurs on the moon and then they found a giant dinosaur. That's what this was all about. That's why I thought I'd share it with you. And speaking of sharing with us, it's time for a call. We've got a call from our Voices from Beyond voicemail. Let's go ahead and take that now. And remember, you can be a part of the show. Call in and share a story. 651-300-4977. You have up to 3 minutes to tell us your weird tale of supernatural experiences. And if your story is longer than that, just call back in and continue the story. Tim will take both pieces of audio, knit them together, and create the excellence that is your phone call. Right here on Darkness Radio.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Tim. This is Ryan. I wanted to call and talk to you guys about a paranormal experience I had. I was 16 years old, and I was dating this girl who lived in the next town over. And her parents were really cool. So, like, since I lived in the next town over, I would spend the night over there on the weekends. And I got to be really close with her dad and really close with her family. And, you know, I was respectful to her dad, so... You know, they would let me sleep over. And until I was 18 years old, they had a guest bedroom that I would sleep in, because like I said, I have respect for her father. I didn't want to sleep in bed with his daughter in his house, you know, didn't want to ruffle any feathers, anything like that. And I just, you know, out of respect, I didn't want to do that. But the way that their house was structured, if you walk straight down the hallway, at the very end of the hallway, my girlfriend's bedroom was there. Her mom's bedroom was right beside it, and the hallway made an L shape and went into the guest room. And I'm a night owl. I have always been a night owl. I stay up late, and everyone in the house went to sleep. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning. And so I go into that guest bedroom, and I'm going to watch some television until I decide to go to sleep. And I reach over to turn the light out as I'm turning on the television. And as I look over, I see an old woman in a nightgown, sandy blonde hair, like an old perm, like, you know, the old ladies would have, glasses, and like a whole nightgown, walk into my girlfriend's bedroom. And I immediately jump up and run down the hallway, turn light on in my girlfriend's bedroom to see where this old woman has went. And there's no one in my girlfriend's bedroom except for her laying there asleep, my girlfriend. And I look into her mom's room, and her mom is asleep in her bed, and her dad had fallen asleep on the couch. And so I walk through the whole house. I'm checking doors and windows. All the doors and all the windows are locked, and there is no way that someone had gotten into the house without me hearing it or seeing it or knowing in any way, shape, or form they would have gotten into the house. They would have had to have got past me to leave, and I would have known they had left. So I go to bed that night, and I wake up the next morning, and I walk up to her dad, and I'm like, hey, I saw something last night, and told him what I saw. And he's like, oh, yeah, so I've seen her, too. He said, I will go up to the bathroom in the middle of the night and I will see the old lady standing in the hallway. And he said, it's almost like she's trying to tell me something, but I can never hear what she's saying. He's like, and I've seen her several times. And I said, okay. I said, well, do you have any idea who she may be? And he said, when we moved into this house, there was a old couple that lived next door, told them as they were moving into the house that there was a old woman that lived there in the 70s who lived by herself, and a couple of guys broke in to rob her and stabbed her to death. So we think that's who it was, and we think that's who is in that house. So that was the night that I saw a full-bodied apparition of a old woman walk into my girlfriend's bedroom. I have had several paranormal experiences throughout my life, and I will call back one day and tell you guys some more about some of the things that I've seen. Thanks for listening to me, guys, and I really love the show. I've been a fan since day one, and can't wait to hear what else you guys do. Thank y'all.
All right. Thank you very much for calling in. I gave you that little break, Tim, that little respite.
Yeah.
Before I hit you squarely betwixt the eyes with another news story that's been sent in to us. And I'd like to read the accompanying email that came with said story.
Sure.
Hello, my favorite paranormal people. Just another AI story for you.
Oh,
hey,
God.
Timmy, what? Timmy.
Huh?
Timmy. You better take some of that CBD oil before reading. Sending love and health your way, your faithful listener, Dawn Benedict.
Dawn.
Doom, 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 doom. Are you ready, Tim?
Yeah.
The idea of artificial intelligence overthrowing humankind has been talked about for many decades, especially here on the show. And scientists have just delivered their verdict on whether we'd be able to control a high-level computer superintelligence. Answer?
No.
Almost definitely not.
No.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
The catch is that controlling a superintelligence far beyond human comprehension will require a simulation of that superintelligence, which we can analyze. But if we're unable to comprehend it, it's impossible to create such a simulation. Rules such as cause no harm to humans can't be set up if we don't understand the kind of scenarios that an AI is going to come up with, suggests the authors of the new paper. Once a computer system is working on a level above the scope of our programmers, we can no longer set limits. A super intelligence poses a fundamentally different problem than those typically studied under the banner of robotic ethics, write the researchers. This is because a superintelligence is a multifaceted and therefore potentially capable of mobilizing a diversity of resources in order to achieve objectives that are potentially incomprehensible to humans, let alone controllable, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the team's reasoning comes from the halting problem put forward by Alan Turing in 1936. The problem centers on knowing whether or not a computer program will reach a conclusion and answer, so it halts or simply loops forever trying to find one. As Turing proved through the smart match, while we can know for some specific programs, it's logically impossible to find a way that will allow us to know that for every potential program that could ever be written, that brings us back to AI, which in a superintelligent state could feasibly hold every possible computer program in its memory at once. Any program written to stop AI harming humans and destroying the world, for example, may reach a conclusion and halt. Or not. It's mathematically impossible for us to be absolutely sure either way, which means it's not containable. In effect, this makes the containment algorithm unusable, says computer scientists Ayad Rawan from the Max Planck Institute for Human Development in Germany. The alternative to teaching AI some ethics and telling it not to destroy the world, something which no algorithm can be absolutely certain of doing, the researchers say, is to limit the capabilities of the superintelligence. It could be cut off from parts of the internet or from certain networks, for example. The new study rejects this idea too, suggesting that it would limit the reach of the artificial intelligence. The argument goes that if we're not going to use it to solve problems beyond the scope of humans, then why create it at all? If we're going to push ahead with artificial intelligence, we might not even know when a superintelligence beyond our control arrives. Such is its incomprehensibility. That means we need to start asking some serious questions about the directions we're going in. This is the drum that Tim's been beating for 15 years, along with other things. A super intelligent machine that controls the world sounds like science fiction, says computer scientists Manuel Sabrián from the Max Planck Institute for Human Development. But there are already machines that perform certain important tasks independently without programmers fully understanding how they learned it. The question therefore arises whether this could be at some point becoming uncontrollable and dangerous for humanity. The research has been published in the Journal of Artificial Intelligence Research, Tim.
Which I get at 5:30 a.m. every morning on my doorstep.
So I'll let that just marinate with you, Tim. We're going to go to happier stories in just a bit. It's time to take a break, folks. And when we come back, a brand new Theater of the Mind. It's time now for a new Theater of the Mind, Ghost of C Street. This happened about 20 years ago, but it still sticks in my mind like it was yesterday. I was 18 years old and had just recently moved into my first apartment with my, at the time, girlfriend. We were made aware of a recent vacancy by a couple that we knew who were basically our best friends at the time and would be living directly across the doorway from them. Since we were all such good friends, it sounded absolutely perfect. Now, I'll describe the layout of this apartment complex as it is important to the story. It was 8 one-bedroom apartments stacked atop of each other, so 4 on the bottom and 4 on top. Our apartment, along with our neighbors, our best friends, were on the top second floor. A stairway divided our front doors that faced each other. Over time, we got to meet and become friendly with the other residents in this apartment complex, including the couple that lived below us. Everything was going well, and, well, we felt very comfortable in our new home. Everyone was very nice, and we all got along great. However, the couple that lived below us was rather quirky. While the boyfriend was a very nice guy and pretty laid back, his girlfriend was what I will politely call different. Or to what we saw, the same kind of crazy. As the weeks rolled on living here, I came home one day to a very pissed off and disturbed downstairs neighbor who worked at night, who not so politely asked if we could stop stomping our goddamn boots up and down the effing stairs all day long. I'm trying to sleep. Confused, I apologized and kind of just moved on from the encounter. The thing was, both myself and my girlfriend and the couple that lived next door to us, the only people living upstairs, all worked during the day. No one would be home to make these loud stomping noises on the stairs during the day, so I just kind of blew it off. A couple of weeks later, I was hanging out with the boyfriend of this couple. I'll call him Joe and Joy for anonymity. We were drinking some beers and other libations when he asked if me and my girlfriend were getting along all right. This puzzled me as we were a very newly in love couple who had never had an angry word or argument between each other. He commented that Joy has heard us arguing in the apartment above, and it was followed by loud stomping up and down the stairs. Confused by this, I assured Joe that everything was fine and again just kind of blew the whole thing off. In the following months, I started to notice a change in my girlfriend's behavior. She seemed more stressed out. She wasn't sleeping well and became depressed. After multiple times asking her what was wrong, she never really wanted to talk about it. I pressed and pushed until one night she eventually broke down and told me what was bothering her. "You're going to think I'm crazy," she said in a shy voice, "but I think this apartment is haunted." At the time, I was the kind of person who found religion, superstitions, and belief in ghosts and any kind of paranormal happenings ridiculous, and the stuff meant for rubes and the uneducated. She knew this, but nevertheless, out of concern, I assured her that I would do all I could to solve this problem, which at the time, I had no idea how to do. Now, skip forward a couple of weeks later, and my girlfriend woke me in the middle of the night. She was terrified, and despite my deep sleep after working 12-hour day, I got up to see what was bothering her. In a rather annoyed tone, I asked, "What? What is it?" She simply said, "Look at the door." I stood and walked to the door and saw exactly what she was talking about. Our bedroom door, which we always kept shut at night, was moving, like someone on the other side was pushing on it. When I looked at the doorknob, which was locked, it was slowly moving back and forth, like someone was trying to open it. Now I was convinced there was some kind of ghostly activity going on here. I didn't know what to do, but as a fan of horror movies growing up, I did the first thing that came to mind. I swung the door open widely, and although there was nothing on the other side of that door, I screamed into the empty hallway before me, "You're not welcome here! This is not your home anymore! Get out! Get out! We don't want you here!" After this, there was not much sleep to be had for the rest of the night. But despite my own skeptical beliefs, the activity that was bothering us seemed to subside, and my girlfriend seemed to feel much more comforted after this encounter. About a week later, our landlord came by to pick up the rent, as he always did in person. He was a laid-back guy who always wanted to be in touch with his tenants, and we all felt very comfortable around him. As he came to pick up the rent, I pulled him into the stairway, away from prying ears, because, well, I had a few questions. "Hey, Ron, has there been any kind of, like, weird stuff in this apartment? Just asking." Ron replied, "Not really, man. Well, I mean, there was a guy who died in there, but it was like natural causes." Floored, I didn't really have a reply and just handed over my rent without any further questions. Afterwards, when questioning the other tenants who had lived there for a while, I found out that the guy who had kind of died of natural causes, as Ron had said, was in a very tumultuous relationship with his boyfriend, who lived there with him for a time and was rather abusive. They often argued in the apartment very loudly. That frequently led to one or both of them stomping down the stairway, only for the argument to proceed outside, which then led to the argument going back up the stairs and back and forth and so on and so on. When I asked what happened to this person, they told me that shortly after the abusive boyfriend moved out, he died of cancer and spent his last days in the apartment we were now living in. After this, I thought of my downstairs neighbor and the crazy girlfriend complaining of loud shouting when no one was home, and the stomping up and down the stairs. After this, I wasn't such a skeptic anymore.
Ooh, scary kids. Welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio. That was Theater of the Mind. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. Another great job, Tim. Thank you very much for that.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Dave and Tim, that's how this email begins. I wasn't going to make you guess this week since I showed your inadequacy as a psychic medium last week. Like 1 out of 5, right?
No, actually it was 2 out of 5, which would have been 40%. Wow. And somebody on Twitter wants to nominate me for a psychic award.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we'll give it a try again today. We'll give you a couple more cracks at it. Thanks for the many hours of great programming into the true crime and paranormal. Especially in these COVID times, I'm up late with my patients' charts, so the time goes by much faster and productively listening to you two idiots. I have never laughed so hard as when you guys really get going on things. These questions have been rolling around in my mind for decades. I was a physicist before becoming a doctor and ascribed to the multiverse hypothesis for decades. The questions do not have definitive answers, at least yet, but I do value your opinion. Oh boy, Tim, a smart guy asking us for smart answers to smart questions.
Good luck.
Where are the ghosts? I do not mean where one might find or record them, but where do they exist physically? I entertain the possibility that on their way to the other side, they may take a detour, whether planned by them or a higher power, and have in this contiguous universe the ability to manifest in some form or forms here in this universe. So where are they? Where do they exist? I think it's just a jump to the left and then a step to the right. I could be wrong, Tim. I don't know. Is that a good mathematical equation?
Quantum
or does
realm?
It only help when you put your hands on your hips and pull your knees in tight and do the pelvic thrust?
Yeah.
Because that'll drive you insane, Tim.
It could, yeah.
Let's do the time warp again. I don't know. Can't answer that question. Where do they exist? I don't know. That's the thing we all want to know. Is it a parallel universe where our physical form is no longer needed, but because of that, it's just an energetic field, so it coincides with our current existence, but just out of phase of our vision, unless they are given the capability to come through or stick around. I don't know. That's fascinating. I'm interested myself. You're the physicist. Tim and I are just guys that like McRibs. So why don't you answer us, Jim Fisher from Eureka?
Question number two. I'm going quantum realm.
What?
I'm going quantum realm.
Been watching Ant-Man, haven't you?
Oh, well, I've seen both of them, yeah.
I like that answer. Question two. When you have had the opportunity to ask questions of ghosts, why do you not ask the above question? On another podcast, a ghost hunter asked a similar question, and the response from the other side was something like, we're not allowed to answer that. What do you think? Well, actually, Jim, I have asked that question. I think Tim's asked that question. Many of us have asked those questions, but if we don't get a response, we don't really report on it. It just turns into another, what's your name, who's your daddy, you know, kind of question, and we don't get anything. But we have tried to ask, you know, and sometimes they'll tell us where they are. They can hear us but cannot see us. So we have had that answer. Others have said that they can see us but cannot hear us, which is weird because I'm asking an EVP and they're responding. So maybe the other side is just full of pranksters and pricks. I don't know, Tim. What are your thoughts?
As far as that question goes, I think you're not going to like my answer. I think the reason that they're not able to tell us is because they're not able to, what's a good way of putting this? They're being forced not to tell us. So in other words, something is keeping them from telling us. And it could be that they're being held against their will. So the ghosts that we're communicating with that are earthbound are being held against their will.
Yikes.
Yeah.
All right. Number three, would your opinions entertain the possibility of heaven or nirvana or nothingness or something else? What are your what are the implications of each? You know, I vacillate the concept of what is heaven, and is it something that we create, and it is a subroutine in our mental, mainframe that we create so that when we shut down, we upload to that frame and that's where we exist. I know it sounds like I need another hit off the bong, Tim, but follow me on that. I mean, so many people have seen the things that they have kind of created or what their belief systems entail. There's different versions of near-death experiences around the world. And each one seems to kind of fit their own edict. But does that mean that it is not a real experience? It is the synapses of the brain shutting down and losing oxygen? I don't believe that. I believe something transcends that. There's that new documentary series, Surviving Death, on Netflix. It's really good. If you haven't had a chance to watch it, it's really good. And Jim, there's some interesting elements that science even examines. And some of the things the doctors say, we cannot eliminate the possibility something much different is taking place of survival outside the physical form because of how long this woman was dead. What she was able to see and comprehend, what she was able to come back and tell us, it shows that consciousness supersedes the physical nature. So I don't know. where it all goes or where we go. Nothingness. Nothingness is what's terrified me for years. That's been my biggest fear, is that the lights go out and there's just nothing. And many of you have written in and said, so what? You won't know then. It's just nothing. But that's a bummer to me. And it does weigh on me in this lifetime. So I pray to God it's not nothingness. Although I've had two near-death experiences where nothing happened. But again, maybe that's important because I had to continue my journey. Had I gotten an answer, would Darkness Radio be on the air 15 years? Would we be on the air, period?
Yeah, exactly.
I already felt like I knew the answers. I don't know. You know, Nirvana, heaven, it's all kind of the same thing, just different slants, I think. And is it a nothingness or something else? It's all conjecture. I think we do surpass the physical form and carry on some way. And I don't know if it's in reincarnation, if that energy is reborn. There's just too much. And again, that surviving death has some really interesting elements of that as well. I don't know. Tim, your thoughts?
I do believe in the way he put it, something else. It's not just heaven or nothing. It definitely is there has to be a hierarchy, and I do believe in a spiritual punishment. There has to be some sort of retribution, because in this life there is getting away with it. And I don't think you get away with it on the other side. I think there is retribution or some sort of punishment if you've done wrong against others and other souls on this side. With that being said, I do believe in the rife. Listen to me now. I'm doing it. The life review process, when you know, and everything that you've heard, and that judgment, and you either the spiritual up or down. You're either going to heaven, which may be a quantum holding place, so to speak. And heaven is, I think, really what they say, what you make it, Dave. I think heaven is, in that respect, in a quantum field, is what you make it. Your loved ones are there, but heaven is literally what you make of it. Heaven could be your childhood home and everybody is there. Heaven could be it could be the ballpark that you loved, you know, sitting at. Heaven could be whatever it is that was close to your heart. It doesn't have to be the kingdom of gold that everyone hears about in the Bible. I don't think it's necessarily that. We've heard people who have had the negative out-of-body experiences, right, that have talked, right, about a dark, hot place with screams. That seems to be pretty much the central experience. So that may be
a Waffle House on Saturday nights.
There you go. I don't think that is so much of a quantum experience where it is what you make it. I think that is a central experience. I think that there is a central shared experience in that punishment. I don't think that there's much getting away from that. And I think if there were no, and follow me on this, I think if there were no punishment on that other side, you would not have demonic experiences here on Earth. I don't think you would have infestations and demonic activity and possession. I don't think you would have that. I don't think you can chalk that up strictly to mental illness. So I think in that is my answer.
You know when we're going to know, Tim?
When we die.
When we're knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
Uh-oh. Don't do that.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to know, Tim. Question number 4, would you consider that ghosts are manifestations of energy? Energy is proportional to frequency. Example, light. Do you think that ghosts are our souls reduced to their essence, their frequencies reconstituted sufficiently to manifest in this realm of the multiverse?
Sure. Yeah.
What is consciousness? Obviously has to be an energy. Because it's recording data, it's recognizing things. So yeah, I think so. I still don't believe that they're little blots of light that zip around in a room, though, on camera, Tim.
I would think it'd have to be a manifestation of the energy of the soul. Sure, yeah.
All right. Now he asks us those questions. We've answered his question, so he gives us a story as a nice little parashare point here, Tim. Okay. You like this?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a satellite office in Northern California town, which I spend the night on the second floor apartment. The clinic is on the first floor. The first night I spent there, I heard things like people downstairs, literally partying. But I figured, hey, new place. But within a few weeks, I was sleeping upstairs when my shoulder was cold enough to awaken me. I grabbed the blankets to pull them up, and they were pulled up right out of my hand. I almost had to change my pants and did not sleep the rest of the night. One morning, I found my shoes in my bed. And no, I do not drink or use any other recreational drugs. Some months after that, I was downstairs in the clinic putting new patients into the single computer I owned then when I heard a noise to my left. Now, it was 9 p.m. and I had been alone for about 4 hours. As I glanced to my left, I saw a little girl, blonde hair, blue eyes, no front teeth, looking at me and smiling. And she was looking at me over the desk so that I could see was her face and her little hands. My first thought came to my lips, where are your parents? But she had vanished. Just like that, poof, gone. I thought that she had ducked down, maybe playing hide and seek or just being silly. But not seeing her, I searched the first floor, then the second floor, then back to the first floor. This is when I had the epiphany that if she had left, the alarm would have gone off. Because of a mild finger push on a window or door, we'll have the alarm screaming. The building was haunted. Throughout the last 20 years, there have been other manifestations like knocking things, things falling over, and my assistants and nurses have caught brief, fleeting views of this little girl. We all see the same girl, blonde, white dress, curly locks, ribbon in her hair. Now, here's the best for last. Just before leaving, an emergency patient came in with her daughter. Her daughter and some grandchildren, aged about 4 and 6. The great-grandmother patient wanted the kids to be quiet in the waiting room, but I told her to let the kids play as no other patients were there. When we were finished, I went into the waiting room where the kid's mom asked me if the little blonde girl was my granddaughter. She was playing tag with her kids. You see? Slightly flummoxed, I asked where she, the child, was, but neither the mom nor the kids knew. I asked the kids if the blonde girl spoke to them. No, but she sure could run fast, the younger child said, but she didn't have any feet. That comes from Jim Fisher in Eureka, California. Jim, that's a hell of a story, buddy. Get me in there. Can we investigate? And by we, I mean me. Can I? I'd love to come in there. Do you have CC cameras? I need to know. And if not, why not? You should be recording. Get some audio recorders. Leave them out on, record all night mode and see what you get. I'd love to know your experience with that. That's pretty cool. Your thoughts, Tim?
I don't get to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get to go.
You can go. I don't know, maybe. You're going to be able to run away from a little girl with no feet who runs really fast and wants to eat your soul?
Why would I want to run?
I don't know, Tim. I don't know. Would you want
to run? There's a lot to eat on me. She'd get pretty full. She wouldn't be able to finish.
Here we jump from that story, which dovetails nicely into this story. Maybe you'll even like this, Jim Fisher of Eureka, California. The headline, and this comes from I Fucking Love Science, having certain traits may make you more susceptible to hearing the dead. Scientists have identified the traits that could make people more inclined to claim that they hear the dead. A new study suggests that those who describe themselves as clairaudient, as opposed to clairvoyant, which is seeing, or clairsentient, which is both feeling and sensing, have certain traits in common, including susceptibility to auditory hallucinations and childhood experiences. If you're wondering why scientists are spending precious time investigating the supposed paranormal, the researchers say the findings of the study have great value in understanding the sometimes traumatic auditory hallucinations that can accompany mental health issues. Their study, fittingly, is published in the Mental Health, Religion, and Culture. The claims of spiritualists, mediums, and psychics have long fascinated scientists. They are met with both skepticism due to lack of evidence and genuine curiosity about why someone would claim they hear contact, or converse with no longer living. Fraud is often the simple answer, but the fact these experiences are notoriously hard to disprove, though it should be noted they are notoriously difficult to prove as well. A recent study found 12 self-proclaimed mediums willing to be put to the test actually performed worse than the control group in attempts to contact the dead. The researchers, led by Durham University, however, wanted to explore why some people with these auditory experiences are more likely to adopt spiritualistic beliefs and engage in so-called practice of hearing the dead, while others who find the experience more distressing may receive a mental health diagnosis. Spiritualists tend to report unusual auditory experiences which are positive, start early in life, and which they are often then able to control. Understanding how these develop is important because it could help us understand more about distressing or non-controllable experiences of hearing voices too, according to Dr. Peter Mosley of Northumbria University, a co-author of the study, as he explained in a statement. Now, folks, I'm going to put this article up on our news page. So you go to darknessradio.com, click on the news. The reason I'm going to put this article up is because there are links throughout this article that will give you more information about that statement, more information about their the study and where it was published, and you can read that study for yourself. But I think it's fascinating nonetheless. They recruited 65 members of the UK's Spiritualist Nation Union and 143 members of the public who don't regularly claim to hear the voices of the dead, to carry out the largest scientific investigation into the experience of clairaudient mediums yet. The researchers gathered detailed descriptions from the mediums on how they experienced these voices and compared levels of absorption, proneness to hallucinations, aspects of their identity, and belief in the paranormal. They found that the self-proclaimed spiritualists, 44.6%, claimed hearing spirits' voices every day, and through these voices were heard primarily in their own head, 65.1%. 31.7% reported experienced spirit voices coming from both sides, inside and outside the head. Compared to the control group, the results showed that spiritualists were more likely to report a belief in the paranormal and less likely to care what other people thought of them. The majority of them experienced their first time hearing voices when they were young, on average 21.7 years old. They also reported a higher level of absorption, a term used to describe total immersion in mental tasks and how effective someone is at tuning out the outside world. They also reported they were more prone to unusual hallucination-like auditory experiences. For the general population, higher absorption was associated with belief in the paranormal, but there was no link between that belief and proneness to hallucinations. I'd like to know what the line for that is, Tim. How do you determine what is a hallucination? Is it because it's a pink elephant or because it's grandma's ghost? How do we, what's the delineation line there, the protocol that they're putting in place to discern that aspect of this story and study? Because what you may consider a hallucination, I may not. I may think, no, that is really a ghost of a little blonde girl in a white dress with ribbon in her hair. Multiple people have seen her without provocation or prompting of any way. So is that a hallucination, a shared mass hallucination, which they've never proven actually exists, or is it a true experience? So I'd like to know what that delineation line is on how they discern what's a real experience and a hallucination.
I would too. The other that's the reason I have an issue with remote viewing. With remote viewing, you're given a target. Are you imagining what it is that you're looking for, or is everyone having a mass hallucination in that point, or are they?
Well, what's interesting for that, if I'm sure you probably remember, but what they do is, like, when I give you a target, Tim, mm-hmm. I give you a set of numbers. Your numbers today are 4, 5, 1, 7. That's all I give you. And then I ask you to give me any senses, any information you get from that number. Now, there's an envelope sitting on my desk with 4, 5, 1, 7 on it. I've not told you what's in that envelope. So you are then, trying to figure out what that photograph or piece of paper or item is that I've put inside that envelope. Then There's the, you know, I can pick an area and like, you know, on the map and I say, okay, you know, Blaine, Minnesota is location 1227. And, I give you 1227 without telling you that it's a location, a person, place, or thing. And you delve in. So when they're able to do that, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, that documentary we talked about, a few months back, and gosh, now the name of it is escaping me. Damn it. It was so good. And it showed different aspects of remote viewing that made it a lot more tangible for me.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there were, you know, they didn't tell this person anything and they were picking up on remarkable aspects. Superhuman. That was the name of the documentary. That really stunned me. So remote viewing, I'm still kind of out on, but I'm really going to do this here, especially with time on my hands. I'm going to find a course that I can take on remote viewing. And I want to try that because I'm fascinated by it, that they remote viewers say they're not psychic or mediumistic, but yet what they're claiming to have are kind of that visionistic ability. So if that can be taught to anybody, I'd love to learn that aspect.
Yeah.
And then how much more effective would you be in a ghost hunt if you could remote view while you're in there? But I guess you're being affected and influenced by the location then, aren't you?
Yes, you are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Weird. All right. Our findings say a lot about learning and yearning for our participants. The tenets of spiritualism seems to make sense of both the extraordinary childhood experiences as well as the frequent auditory phenomena they experience as practicing mediums. Lead researcher Dr. Adam Powell of Durham's University Hearing the Voice Project said, but all of these experiences may result more from having certain tendencies or abilities than from simply believing in the possibility of contacting the dead if one tries hard enough. How about that? Your next email is here, Tim. How does it begin?
Dear Dave.
Hi, Dave and Tim. So you're 0 and 1 right now. I wrote in once about activity in my old house, but I wanted to tell you the story about my trip to Gettysburg. My dad passed a couple of years ago, but he was a huge fan of ghost hunters. For me, it was kind of cheesy, and I always remember someone's behind the camera, and if they don't find anything, they can't make a good TV show. That's not always true. Anyway, our only vacation was when I graduated at 18, and he took us to Gettysburg. I always hated history, but I respected it more after this. The very first thing that happened to me when we got into Gettysburg, our first stop was the Valley of Death. I stepped out of our van on the road and tried to walk up to the plaque. The moment I stepped my foot onto the ground, I got lightheaded, dizzy, overcome with emotions, hate, anger, sadness, to the point I couldn't see. I remember this because it took me a few moments to read the plaque, and I wrote this off as hours in a van and just getting lightheaded. Something else that fascinated me was there was red plants around a long brick wall and a certain hill, thinking maybe iron from the blood absorbed into the soil. I don't know. I think one of our favorite destinations was Devil's Den. My dad even reenacted a famous picture taken there, me and my brother playing on the rocks. I could have sworn my foot was grabbed, and I just kept going and thinking nothing of it. Next came the point where I saw the only apparition I've ever seen in my entire life. We went to the slaughter pen area. I wandered off a side path into the woods. Around the area, there was a bunch of boulders. As I'm walking underneath or beside one of these boulders, I swear I can make out the stripes on a pair of pants laying on the ground, as if a soldier was laying there. As I noticed this, out of the corner of my right eye, I saw something walk behind another boulder to my right. While this was happening, it was pitch quiet to me. The sound wasn't broken for a couple seconds. Then I heard kids playing in a creek about 30 yards away. Later that night, around the slaughter pen, my brother and dad went to the bathroom. The lights in there came on after dark, so it freaked us out a little when I went to walk in and all of a sudden the bathroom lights shut off. So I took a camcorder with a light into the woods. I was only in there for about a minute and the whole thing completely died, and I ended up peeing in the dark. I know it might be a play on the eyes, but I felt as if the whole woods were swirling with black shadows. I couldn't explain it, but I got scared and ran out of there. That night in the hotel, I snuck out to walk around town by myself. Nothing special happened. I walked by a cop on the streets. I went down some alleys, but I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being followed or watched the whole time. One of the nights in the hotel, I was laying there reading a book that we picked up at one of the ghost shops. My dad and brother are sleeping, and I noticed a light, just an orb hovering in the corner of the bedroom. I heard people talking out in the parking lot, so I was thinking maybe it's just a reflection off a car window or something. It never went away till I had to pull the blanket over my head to go to sleep. On the way home, continuing to read the ghost book, one of the many sightings or stories was people felt like they were being grabbed on the ankle on the Devil's Den Rocks. My dad told me later he may have caught an EVP. After that, I became fascinated with history, less about ghost hunting, because the scariest stories to me are the ones that happen naturally or in your home. I know what I saw that day. I've heard some crazy things, heard some stories, but I never saw anything except for that day in Gettysburg. And that comes to us from Tim in Ohio. Thank you, Tim in Ohio. It's a good story, Tim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just saying. Don't always have to agree with me just because I say, Tim. Jeez.
Okay, fine. Horrible story, Tim. Terrible story.
Wow. Why would you be like that?
Well, because you said I don't have to agree with you on every story.
It hurts my feelings when you get aggressive, Tim. Who ghosted there? That's the headline of this clever story, Tim. Who ghosted there? Former EastEnders legend Leslie Grantham is said to be haunting an old prison where he served time for murder. A TV paranormal investigator is convinced his spirit is to blame for spooky noises and shouting at the closed HMP Kingston in Portsmouth. Grantham, who played Dirty Den in the BBC soap opera, finished his sentence at the Nick in 1976. He had served 10 years of a life sentence for killing a cabbie in 1966 during a bungled robbery in Germany. Urban explorer and paranormal investigator Carol Hassel checked for spirits. He said, "It is definitely spooked. We heard what sounded like Dirty Den's voice saying, 'Release them and search them.' I asked, 'Is there anyone here with us now?' and got a reply of, 'Yeah.' And at one point, we heard shouting and laughing down the corridor. It was terrifying. Leslie Grantham may have left this world, but his spirit is still haunting this prison." Grantham was released from prison in 1976 and went to drama school. He landed the Den Watts role in 1985 and became one of the show's biggest stars. Den was killed off in 1988, but made a return in 2003 for 18 months. Graham died in 2018 at the age of 71. So if he... why would his ghost go back to the prison? That's what I always have problems with. Why would that be the place your ghost would hang out?
I do too. It's like, you know, why would you go to a place that you absolutely abhorred during life? I
you
would
know what
not,
might be?
What's that?
Maybe it's, you know, there's a thing called soul retrieval. And Lena Swanson had talked to us about this. As a matter of fact, she has been wanting for like 10 years to do a soul retrieval with me. You leave pieces of yourself, fractures of yourself throughout history and through certain places because of incidents that took place there. Part of this guy's humanity may have been there. So maybe that aspect of him continues to live there, that fracture of his soul piece. Huh?
I'd hate to think that a part of my soul is sitting somewhere in a duck blind over at the Anoka County Game Fair. Because that was not
traumatic there.
It was traumatic. It's this is not going to sound good when I put it this way, but you ever pulled skeet before?
Not in front of people. Yes, I have. I've actually shot skeet.
Okay. No, there's shooting skeet, and then there's actually pulling clay pigeons where you sit in a pit, and you know, and you
pull the lever and shoot it out there.
Yeah, and you throw the clay pigeons. You're throwing pigeons for people. And sometimes you're throwing, they have the manual traps that you throw, you know, like two, three, four at a time. Well, I did this all week long for 2 weeks, and I had blisters on my hands, and it's a dirty job. You sit in this pit. It's a dirt pit. It's probably about, I don't know, a foot deep or so. And I was a teenager at the time. It was something to do for a fall job. You know, you're 13, 14 years old. You're just trying to make some money. And not good. If I left a piece of my soul there, I don't want to end up going back there to go get it. It can just stay there in that dirty little pit.
Yeah. You don't want to soul retrieve that piece?
No, it can stay there. Yeah.
Well, that story is also up in our news because you can actually watch some video and hear the audio they claim to have caught. I say they claim because I've listened to it. I can't hear it, but maybe you can. So go check it out, darknessradio.com. Click on the news tab. Here's another story that will also be featured under the news tab area, Tim. I'll tell you what, I'm going to shoot you this link whilst we talk.
All right.
Because, again, folks, if you don't know this, we are together in this alone. Uh-huh. Yep, you heard that right. Tim and I are recording the show at safe distance.
Yeah.
He is locked in his home. I am locked in my home. And that's the way we do the program. I'm going to shoot you the link to this story because I would like you, Tim, to look at this video for yourself whilst I read the story.
Okay.
And tell me what your thoughts are on it, and then we'll discuss it. Headline, woman spots terrifying spirit behind her in dance video she shot at home alone. In a horrifying experience, a woman was home alone making a TikTok video when she noticed something eerie in the background. TikTok user Chloe filmed herself dancing to Britney Spears' Toxic while being alone in her home in the UK. While dancing, she was not aware of anything happening behind her. Later, she posted the video online asking people to look behind her. The spooky video has already been viewed more than 14 million times on TikTok, and it reads the caption, "Had no intentions of posting this, but look behind me on the stairs. I'm home alone," all in caps. She's grooving to the beats of the music when seconds later we see what appears to be a dark figure moving on the stairs behind her. The image is blurry, so we can't clearly see it, what it is in the background, but whatever it is seems to be going down the stairs. The viral video has gone viral online and has already collected more than 1.7 million likes and more than 40,000 comments from people online. We have that YouTube video posted for you. Again, the whole story at darknessradio.com under the news tab. It's a 15-second clip has caught the public's attention online and left the internet divided over what exactly they think the figure was. Some of the people joked that she wasn't home alone anymore. Some people might have thought that it was a dog, which was appearing behind the girl. To this, a person wrote that everyone who thinks this is a dog should open their eyes and look how tall it is. Later in another video, Chloe showed her fans how small her dogs were, as well as the gate that keeps them away from the stairs. Another scared user wrote, "Please protect me, Lord. I do not claim this negative energy." Another concerned user commented to praying to Lord to give him strength. He wished that this would be a joke. But some of the people did not believe the paranormal side of it at all and were not convinced that it was a spirit, speculating that it was a mere change of light. One person pointed out it occurred due to her hand's movement. He added that the same thing happened before, but it wasn't visible as it wasn't as intense. In other videos, Chloe stated that this isn't the first time she sensed something paranormal in the house and shared another video in which her nephew's legs can be seen being pulled by something invisible. So she didn't include that video, but you can click on her name and her story, and I'm sure if you're on TikTok, you can find her other video that way. But that is also up now. Did you get a chance to see it, Tim?
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I've watched it a few times, and I'm zooming in.
See, I thought of the same thing with the intense light that's up behind her when her arm's moving. The aperture of the camera could be trying to focus because of the light changing so rapidly that it gives a false perception of some movement. But then there also appears to be something else to it coming down the stairs, more than just a dark shadow. So I don't know.
You know, when you zoom in real tight on it, it does look kind of like it's an autofocus shadow issue in the upper. It's like an autofill in the upper left-hand corner of the you've got like the triangle shape of the stairwell, and then it kind of autofills in the left hand corner, and then it kind of autofills in that more open space. It's right. Kind of in the way it moves, it looks like someone's moving down the stairs. It really does look like there's something there.
Yeah.
When you first couple times you watch it, you go, well, wait a minute, is that something moving on the stairs? But then you have to look at it, and then when you bring up that theory, when someone brings up the theory of the arm moving and it just being a trick of the camera, then you start to look for the shadow. And you really do see that there are two separate shadow incidents going on there. And I really do think it's a trick of the technology.
That's what I think as well. But like I said, there's also there's another element to it that I don't feel as confident saying that. So just take a look at it for yourself, folks. Go to darknessradio.com, click on the news tab, and you will find it there. Just a few more quick stories, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
A few more quick ones. Triangle of Death, the most deadly triangles not near Bermuda. The Bermuda Triangle, of course, is a known hotspot for paranormal activity where people mysteriously vanish. Time gets weird, and you may never navigate your way out of there ever again. Believe it or not, paranormal death triangles are not exclusive to Bermuda. There are several triangular hotspots of the paranormal and true crime activities that lead people to ask, what on earth is going on? Is it our collective imagination making patterns where there are none? Or are these triangles of deaths truly hotspots where just things get weird? Whether that weird is in terms of supernatural happenings or mysterious disappearances, we can't say. But maybe be extra cautious when checking out some of these places that have made the list. The Bridgewater Triangle. If you're in the southeast part of Massachusetts, then be careful as you drive through the 200 square mile known as the Bridgewater Triangle. There are stories of some bizarre happenings going on. Podcast series like Lore and Morbid have covered the Bridgewater Triangle, including a famous encounter with a creature named the Puckwudgie that had tried to lure a man somewhere out while with his dog. There are also stories of Native American curses over Hamakonkwunk Swamp. Tim,
Hamakonkwunk Swamp. That's exactly how it's pronounced?
Hockamock Swamp. I don't know why my mouth refused to work with me there, but it's Hockamock Swamp. Lasting for days on the King Philip's War. Unsurprisingly, the white settlers screwed over the natives and took their wampum belt, which is said to have cursed the land until it is returned or found. Others say that the land was cursed because of said poor treatment from the colonists. Yikes, there's a lot of stories of spectral orbs, UFOs, big cats running around, and cults doing animal sacrifices in the forest. Needless to say, be careful driving through the Death Triangle, whose points are Abington, Rehoboth, I don't know how to say that, and Freetown. You may just see some stuff that you wish you would forget, like forever. And don't go follow a Puckwudgie. That's the information given here. Ireland as well has got its Vanishing Triangle. True crime fans are divided as to whether these eight disappearances of young women from the mid to late 1900s are coincidence or the work of a serial killer within Ireland's Vanishing Triangle. Either way, things are definitely pretty spooky when discussing the case of Annie McCarrick, Eva Brennan, Imelda Keenan, Jojo Dullard, Kiera Breen, Fiona Pender, Fiona Sinnott, and Deirdre Jacob, which remain unsolved. The case is a source of fascination for Irish media, who occasionally discuss this grouping of unsolved cases. In the true crime community, it's been covered for true crime YouTube to episodic podcasts alike. No one could really seem to come to a consensus on what happened with these young women, who all just vanished into thin air, never to be seen again. There's a $10,000 reward in the tip that leads to a recovery of a body. And finally, the Bass Strait Triangle. The last triangle covered on this list is the Bass Strait Triangle over in Australia. This is a more traditional death triangle activity of people flying out over the water of the Bass Strait and never being seen again, along with UFO sightings. To the top of the mysterious disappearances is that of Friedrich Valentich in 1978, where he was reportedly taken by a UFO. Since 1797, there have been a ton of shipwrecks in the area due to the treacherous waters of the Bass Strait. Given how relatively small it is, it's still way higher than you expect. Such disappearances over the years include the 1906 disappearance of the SS Ferdinand Fisher, SS Federal, whose wreckage was finally discovered in 2019, and the HMS Sapo. That's not counting the missing aircrafts as well. The most famous, of course, is Valentich. But others' disappearances include the 1972 disappearance of Brenda Heen and Max Prince and Loina in 1935. Interesting. Death triangles. Next on Darkness Radio. Demi Lovato's back at it, Tim. She captures a UFO sighting in broad daylight. They're coming, she says. On Sunday, January 16th, the I Love Me singer-songwriter shared a video of what appeared to capture what Lovato believed was a UFO in broad daylight. Another day, another UFO sighting, Lovato can be heard saying while pointing her camera up at the cloudless blue skies where two bright white orbs of light can be seen in the distance. Wow, what the f***, Lovato says in the clip before warning, they're coming. Unsure whether to take video seriously, Lovato's fans had mixed, albeit hilarious, reactions to the suspicious clips. Are they aliens? One user commented. Another believer wrote, I know it sounds crazy, but I saw one not long ago outside my mom's house. Skeptics like this, user quipped, when they show up with you at the inauguration as your background dancers. I don't get it. Someone else insisted, not unidentified when you can see their balloons, LOL. I don't know that they're balloons, but maybe. Lovato's first alleged alien encounter made headlines back in October of 2020 when the Anyone musician shared footage of what she claimed was a UFO, hoping that the government would finally acknowledge the truth about extraterrestrial life among us. At the time, the 28-year-old explained she'd been among a small group of loved ones and Dr. Stephen Greer when she filmed the unidentified floating object in the sky. Over the past couple of months, I've dug deep into the science of consciousness and experienced not only peace and serenity like I've never known, but I've also witnessed most incredibly profound sightings, both in the skies as well as feet away from me, Lovato shared at the time. If we were to get 1% of the population to meditate and make contact, we would force our governments to acknowledge the truth about extraterrestrial life among us and change our destructive habits, destroying the planet. What do you see, folks? Is it balloons? Is it aliens? I don't know. Take a look. The video's up over at darknessradio.com. You can check all of the news stories that I've mentioned will be posted there, because I don't fib, Tim. When I say they're posted there, they're posted there. And our final story is also posted there. Two parts of it are posted there, Tim. That's how exciting it is.
Mm-hmm.
See the CIA's trove of UFO-related intelligence documents. From reports of flying saucers to mysterious bomb blasts, the CIA has opened its catalog of intelligence on reports of unidentified flying objects to the public. UFOs Fact or Fiction contains dozens of downloadable files on sightings and unexplained phenomena from around the world. The documents cover five decades of research from the 1940s to the early 1990s. It's not clear, however, if the CIA has included all their files. The agency did not immediately respond to requests for comment. In one report from June of 1996, two Lithuanian police officers working near the border reported seeing a spherical object hanging and pulsing, alternately shrinking and expanding around 12:30 a.m. that morning. They also described a strange sound, like an electric or electronic crackle. The object rose higher in the air than when they approached it to investigate. It flew away after 30 minutes, according to the report. But it was noted that the tall grass around the place over which the sphere had hung was flattened to a radius of 10 meters. Local scientists did not have an opinion on the reported sighting. The catalog consists mainly of CIA cables reporting unsubstantiated UFO sightings in the foreign press and intra-agency memos about how the agency handled public inquiries regarding UFOs. Another example from 1965 described a sighting of red, green, and yellow flying saucers seen flying over Deception Island for 2 hours by Argentine, Chilean, and British bases in Antarctica. The flying saucers were also seen flying in formation over the South Orkney Islands in quick circles. There has been renewed interest in UFOs, or unidentified aerial phenomena, the term used by the government, after a provision in the December COVID relief and government spending bill gave U.S. intelligence agencies 6 months to release what they know about the extraterrestrial realm. The provision was tucked into the committee comment section of the Intelligence Authorization Act for the 2021 fiscal year. The act was contained in the overall relief bill. Now, intelligence officials have about 180 days from the signing of the bill to give an unclassified report about the aircrafts. The reports needed to contain analysis of any UFO data as well as any name as possible as security threats that they may pose. So that article is up, and we also have the direct link that will take you to the documents that have been made available. How about them apples, Tim? You like them apples?
Oh, them's good apples.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. That's all up. I want to do a quick movie review. Fatima. I watched this the other day on pay-per-view with my daughters and my wife. It is a retelling of the story of the visions of Our Lady of Fatima, the Virgin Mary appearance, Marian appearances. And it's a really good story. I mean, it's I don't want to say low budget as in it's cheaply made, but you could tell it wasn't, you know, expensive. But Harvey Keitel is in it. I can't think of the other guy's name now. Dang it. There's only like two or three recognizable actors or actresses in the movie, but it's a pretty interesting telling of the story of the visions. And it goes on to show you what these children, these three children, had to go through. And if you're into the paranormal and the concept of visions and religiosity, it's fascinating that when the Virgin Mary made these appearances, she would only appear to the children. The three of them would kneel and talk. The local government and people were trying to shut them down. And slowly every month, because the appearance would happen once a month, large groups of people would show up. And it evolved to, I think the point is, 77,000 people on the day the miracle took place, when Mary had promised a miracle. And it is one that is one of the largest cited miracles in history, where the sun began to dance in the sky and change colors, and then appear to be plummeting towards Earth, sent people scrambling, screaming, and yelling, and then it stopped and went right back into the sky. Hmm. And you hear this story of the suffering that these little girls had to deal with, of their faith, and how strong were they to Mary and this request that she would make of them. But she goes on, Mary tells some predictions, if you will, and these predictions all came true. And do you know that the two little children that died as kids, two of the three, one went on to become a nun for many years and consulted with the popes and such. But the other two that passed away were just canonized like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
So it's pretty impressive. And I guess at one point they dug up the little girl's grave and her body was completely uncorrupted.
Really?
That's what the story is. So it's fascinating stuff. Check it out. It's cool. I would go 1 out of 5. I'd give it a good solid 3.5 stars. It's an interesting movie that tells an equally fascinating story of the paranormal and those that believe. So check it out. You can get past the religiosity of it because it's more about the experience and how people treat one another. It's a fascinating movie, I thought, at least. That's going on. And tomorrow is, of course, Thursday. Tomorrow night, we have got a big extravaganza for you. We've got Holzer's Ghosts. We're going to be talking about the Whaley House episode. That was the very first episode that we as a team filmed. I think it was the third or fourth or fifth episode that actually aired in season one. But that's the episode where I get knocked on my butt. And we're going to be discussing that with some special guests. That's tomorrow night on the program. The live stream will be on our YouTube channel, Darkness Radio YouTube channel. You can go there, subscribe so you don't miss it. And it will also be on my Facebook page. So when you see the pop-up for it on my Facebook page, make sure to click the little star notification so that you remember to watch it. And you can just go live stream it right from there. We take your questions. We're interactive, me and the special guests. So I hope you'll check that out. That'll be tomorrow night. But tomorrow on the show, we've got a great guest lined up. Our friend Kitsy Duncan is back. Her new book, I'd Rather Talk to Dead People. We're going to talk about her experiences with the strange and supernatural. That's tomorrow on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. That's Tim. I'm Dave. You've been listening to Darkness Radio.